Wicked Cool Feature Alert.
Hey there, podcast fans. Thanks for listening. Now, you can also reach out and send me a text message. On every episode, at the top of the show notes, you'll see a link that says, Send Us a Text Message. Simply click it, write something super nice and sweet, and away we go. Also remember to please subscribe, share this podcast with a friend by telling them about it, and leave us a positive review, whether it's on Apple, Spotify, your favorite podcast streaming service, or even on our website at www.afraidofnothingpodcast.com.
The people that are having experiences there are few that are having very negative experiences. Mm-hmm. And there are very malevolent beings out there as well. But they're only a small part of the fraction of all the beings that are good, mm-hmm. and that are actually trying to help. And, you know, some of them are neutral. They just want to come and take what they can because everyone's looking for resources on all mm-hmm. kinds of different planets.
So, oh, interesting.
Yeah, the planet doesn't belong to you because you live there.
Sure.
It's free for everyone in the universe. I think a lot of people forget that.
In a world where nothing is known, nothing is certain, reality is not real. Wake up! Be afraid of nothing. I'm Bob Heskey.
Robert.
The host with the ghost.
This is my podcast based on my paranormal documentary, Afraid of Nothing. Each episode, we talk to people who see life and the afterlife through a different lens. Join me.
Who is this large man? And what's he doing in our bedroom?
As we lift the veil and open our minds to see beyond our eyes lie, this is Afraid of Nothing. Nothing.
So this is Kyle Carvin. I have abducted the Afraid of Nothing podcast from that human once labeled Bob Heskey. I'm here with my longtime friend, Craig Campobasso. Bob, he's still here to chime in, so you'll still hear his lovely radio voice. So Craig, I've known since it was like 2009, 2010-ish. He's an Emmy-nominated casting director. He's a writer of both books and screenplays. He's a producer. He's a director. He's also an ET and UFO enthusiast. He's written multiple books on all things UFO and extraterrestrial life. His work is challenging us readers to rethink creation and raise our consciousness. He's appeared on multiple radio shows. He's been on podcasts. He was on Beyond Belief on Gaia.com, History Channel's Ancient Aliens. Craig, welcome to Afraid of Nothing. It's good to talk with you again.
You too. Happy to be here.
Awesome. And Bob, would you like to also say hello? I will allow it.
Yeah, thanks for taking the duct tape off for a minute, Kyle. Appreciate it. But yeah, this is great. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. So I think I have to start off with Craig. So we all have our own journey or some inspiration or experience that really started our interest into the paranormal world. What was it for you that really kicked it off?
Well, when I was 26, I had a major spiritual awakening. And we don't have enough time to really go into all of what happened, but I went from a very asleep guy and in the matter of 2 years becoming totally awake and aware. But I just kept going through these experiences where my consciousness kept elevating, and then I just started seeing, it was sort of like if there was a shield around the earth, all of a sudden I could see beyond that. And all of these books and things just sort of came crashing into my head. So I just started writing all about it.
This might be out of the blue, but do you do meditation at all or any kind of spiritual work you do? Do you think that really helps or is a major part of all this?
Well, I didn't start that until the awakening happened.
interesting.
Yeah. And then connecting on the inner, connecting to source, all of that back in those beginning days. And I was a guy that went to work every single day, came home, went out with my friends, went and had a good time on the weekends. And that was my bubble. And then all of a sudden, boom, I got catapulted out of that into the grand scheme of the universe. And then, I just wanted to know as much as possible what was out there. You know, we had Star Trek that took us out there, but I wanted to know it from the extraterrestrial's point of view, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened, you know, and it just answered a whole lot of questions and things of that nature. But I think now, especially, I do believe disclosure is going to come through the people. So many people now just don't believe anything that they've heard before. And I mean, really, that on a planet that sits at the edge of a galaxy that's populated with so many different humans, that God, source, whatever you want to call it, just created us, who's not even fully conscious.
Yeah, it seems so naive, right?
Right.
That makes me think of, I was actually going to ask you later on, what are your thoughts on the links that governments go or the powers that be? Why do they go to such lengths to oppress information, to hide and cover up practically all things UFO? What's behind all that?
Well, I think in the early days, even predating Eisenhower, that they were very nervous if they were in contact. They were supposedly all in contact with various extraterrestrials. The fully conscious ones were here to steer them in the right direction. And the other ones who were more of a, you know, I sort of put them in two categories. The fully conscious ones are the big G for God, and the other ones are the small g, right? They have the technology, but they don't have the spiritual backbone to actually do that. So what they do is they come to younger worlds and they tempt governments with the technology in exchange for various things of resources and things of that nature. Now, I also believe that they wouldn't want other nations knowing that they were talking to these races and garnering information on how to build craft and all of that, so that our country remains the superpower. But I think over the years, it's changed a lot. They really can't come out and say it, but they're letting little things out at a time now just to get the temperature of everybody. With everybody who's now out there talking the talk and walking the walk and in their spirituality, raising consciousness, that everyone is already connected to what's out there. So many people are having visitations from extraterrestrials. I mean, there's people who are having face-to-face contact, some of which I've interviewed, which are going to be in my Extraterrestrial Species Almanac documentary coming out next year. I just also find it interesting, and I don't even know if you know this, Kyle, but when I was 12, my mom told me that my dad was my stepdad and that I had a biological father and that she didn't know him well and she didn't know where he was or anything like that. Long story short, I tried to find him several times. I couldn't, when the internet came about, couldn't find him. I found the name, but it wasn't the right person. And long story short, right when I started writing in 2019, the Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, I got a phone call from a woman in Canada who said, I'm your actual fourth or fifth cousin on your mother's father's side, and I'm looking for some information. And I gave it to her, and I connected her to my mother's sisters. My mom passed away in 1998, so she wasn't alive at this time. And I said, could you find my biological father? I had already done my DNA testing. She went in and she found my biological father. He had passed away in 2006. And so he's buried at Forest Lawn. So I went down there and asked if they had a name of the person who called when he had passed away to come and pick up the body. And they actually did.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing? A different last name. Came home, looked it up on the internet. It was a 74-year-old man who lived around the corner from me. And so I wrote a letter. I had his address. I put my picture in there and said, if you know anybody in his family, could you forward this? 2 days later, after I mailed it, I got a call from one of his sons who said, my dad got your letter. And he said, normally we wouldn't even respond to something like this, but you're a dead ringer for Fred. And I said, well, was your dad friends with him? And he said, no, it's actually his half brother. And I went, oh, I said, so you're my cousin. And he went, yeah. He goes, but it's really freaky. You look exactly like him, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we got together for dinner, me, this one son, and my uncle. And my uncle just stood there and stared at me the whole time with this smile on his face. He goes, oh my God, you're like the same height as him. You talk like him. You look like him. And he said, oh, I'm so mad at him that he never told us about you. We could have been enjoying you our whole life. And I said, well, yes, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I said, well, just tell me a little bit about him. And he said, well, he loved the Air Force. He really wanted to be in the Air Force. So my mom had to sign papers for him to go into the Air Guard when he was under 18. When he turned 18, they put him right into the Air Force. And he said, oh, by the way, he was part of Project Blue Book. Could you even imagine how far my face fell?
Sure, sure, right.
I mean, I'm like, oh my God, it makes so much sense. You know, here he was doing it for Blue Book. I'm now writing books for MUFON. They're just, one's a public and one's a private organization. And then when he left the Air Force many years later, he came back here. And what did he do? He ultimately became the head of construction at Warner Brothers, building sets for movies and TV.
Oh, no way. Yeah.
And I'm a casting director, and I worked out the dates. There was about a year's time when I was at Universal and he was at Warner Brothers. I mean, we literally were at the back door. So anyway, you know, so I have this whole new wonderful family. And
so it's running in the blood.
It's in the blood. It's in the DNA. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. It's crazy. It's just in your DNA.
Did they have any stories about anything from Project Blue Book?
The son that I met and then his other son, they told me that they used to try and pry stuff out of him.
Yeah.
And he just wouldn't talk. They said he literally would not talk about it. And then sometimes he would tease them and say, well, some people say there's stuff out there.
Yeah, right. Right. That's so funny. I have a good friend in Connecticut, and he, I don't remember the relation, if it was his grandfather or an uncle or exactly what, but when he was in hospice care, and they were doing the same thing, just trying to pry, because he had some sort of government job.
Yeah.
FBI or CIA or something like that. And they asked him, please just tell us, are aliens real? And my friend said, he just took a moment and just responded, you wouldn't believe the world that you live in. So it's like the same kind of thing. And it always makes me wonder, I can totally understand when there's the worst things than death, as they say, what really keeps people's lips sealed, because it does become like a certain point where I imagine threats against family members. That's probably the strongest threat I can imagine personally. So maybe that's, you know, reason enough, but I'm always curious about whistleblowers. I just want more. But anytime anybody kind of, you know, eases on that edge. It's like they're made out to be some crazy tinfoil hat in the middle of a desert conspiracy theorist.
Exactly. And, you know, we know that there were paid influencers in the past that came in and said all that stuff. I used to remember seeing Philip Klass on all the programs. They would tell the story, then they'd interview Philip Klass. And he would basically sit there looking, well, it's swamp gas. Like, oh my God. I mean, are people buying this?
Sure. Right.
You know, right. Are they buying it? It's crazy. Literally insanity.
No, it is. Do you think there could be a tipping point? What kind of event do you think would have to happen for tipping point?
Well, I think we're at that tipping point. They're not going to come out and say that they're real and that they're here. They can't. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it from their point of view, I, in a way, agree with them. That's why so many people are now experiencers, because they're having the experience for themselves. A lot of these people who were in these government positions, military positions, are also experiencers. Some of them have had interaction with extraterrestrials like Clifford Stone. I got to sit with him for one whole long day and listen to his stories. Oh my God. I mean, he was the interfacer with an extraterrestrial being and that kind of thing. Like I said before, it's really going to come through the people. I'm also a part of the new Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. Oh, wow. All of us on the board go from Stephen Bassett, Danny Sheehan, Paul Hynek as well, who I'm friends with, J. Allen Hynek's son. He's in my documentary as well. And Stephen Greer, Thomas Jane also is a part of the group, the actor.
Oh, really?
He's been into this for a long time. I see him a lot of time at functions. He's a great guy. Great guy. Two producers who did Project Blue Book, which Paul was a consultant on.
Sure.
So there's a wide variety. If you just type in Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, we now have Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And if you look it up, you'll find the website and you can learn more about it there. But we're trying to bring a more positive message about beings from somewhere else, that they're not coming here to eat you.
Sure. Right. Yeah. That's probably, I would guess, the biggest fear. Anytime there are leaks in the media, it seems to have that angle that aliens would be malevolent forces. But it also seems like people that have experiences are saying quite the opposite.
The people that are having experiences there are few that are having very negative experiences, and there are very malevolent beings out there as well. But they're only a small part of the fraction of all the beings that are good and that are actually trying to help. And, you know, some of them are neutral. They just want to come and take what they can, because everyone's looking for resources on all kinds of different planets.
So, interesting.
Yeah, a planet doesn't belong to you because you live there.
Sure.
It's free for everyone in the universe. I think a lot of people forget that.
What do you think about this possibly stupid theory that I have, that we're basically the apes to our current selves? We're the apes in the progress of evolution, and they're here part of the reason they're here is because they're studying their most primitive versions of themselves. Is that a thing?
Here's the thing. At a certain point, most of the people that lived here were fully conscious, and then it went into some sort of denigration in consciousness, and we reverted back to duality. Could that have been during the times of Atlantis and Lemuria? I don't know. I do know a friend of mine who is still alive, is good friends with a Lemurian who lives beneath Mount Shasta. And they're all human looking like us. I've learned a lot of the history from that, which I just totally find fascinating. They're a fully conscious race. Interestingly enough, in Agartha, there seems to be a Melchizedek priest, and in some cases, priestess, that are the spiritual advisors for these various communities. I know that in Mount Shasta, there was Richard E. Byrd. When he went into the inner earth, he also met with the beings there. He didn't say they were Melchizedek, but he called them a priest. He called the leader or the advisor the priest. And then there's an old book, it's over 100 years old, about a man, and I can't remember if it was his son or a friend, but they, through something, being in a boat, got pulled into the inner earth. They met with the beings there, and when they went from city to city, that they talked about each city having a priest as well, and that everything there was bigger. And they supposedly lived there for, I don't know if it was like a year or whatever. And then when they came back out and, of course, told the story, they put them in the loony bin.
So, yeah, sure.
You know, but anyway, it's just fascinating to hear all these, all the different stories and things from people. I know a lot of people that say that they go in there astrally, but you can't get into a place like that unless you're invited.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mount Shasta, is that a dormant volcano?
Yes.
Yeah. I watch a lot of, I go down rabbit holes on YouTube a lot.
Yeah.
I watched this thing about, is it Cotopaxil? Is that how you say the volcano in Ecuador? I'm not sure if that's the
proper
pronunciation, but I watched a video about that. And they had some video footage of things flying in and out of Cotopaxil, which is also a volcano. And you can see it clear enough. I'm not sure, but it seems plausible that it could be something UFO. But it does seem to go in and out of the volcano directly. So I'm curious if there's something about volcano. Is that something that you know anything about? Or maybe it's like connected to like a ley line type thing?
From what I've heard is that they're very fascinated with what happens on a planet, especially in volcanoes and things like that, that a lot of things have been seen over there. Are they harnessing some kind of energy? Are they just studying the Earth's progression? Nobody, of course, knows. I think I just saw this on the Spielberg Netflix series about UFOs, that not Chernobyl, the one in Tokyo, that, you know,
they were that Fukushima?
Whatever one that was, the last one, right? That was huge, that they were in hazmat suits and the meter was something like 3,000 something with radiation. It seems like they've actually filmed this because they were showing you, and then they filmed a disc that went over the actual power plant and it shot a beam inside of it. And then the next reading was 800.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So I do believe, I mean, if it was 3,000 and that spread out into the world.
Sure.
And into the, you know, food supply and all that kind of stuff, it would be devastating. So we know that a lot of them are here helping silently behind the veil.
Right. Yeah. I think one of your books, the Almanac, it goes into the topics of distinctions between different species
and
where they're from and the whys of their behavior, their agendas. And you said something before, there's plenty of benevolent, but there's also some malevolent.
Right.
Is that entire species that might be one or the other, or is it just like humans where there's good and bad in all types of group?
We're always going to find that faction, even in fully conscious groups.
Mm-hmm.
Where if the ego gets altered through degeneration in thinking, then they sort of become rogue. They become outcasts from their previous society. Yeah, in the ET Almanac, we do universal origins, their physical characteristics, their belief system, cosmic agendas, their technology, consciousness abilities, and dimensional capacities. Now, when I wrote this book, I've read tons of contactee books, people who are having face-to-face. So some of them are not alive, but their books, there were books that were written at the time. And so I went to those publishers. So a lot of the information, especially on the technologies and things like that, came directly from face-to-face contact with people who were here. It's fascinating to me, like Colonel Wendell Stevens, who everybody knows. I think he published something like 60-plus books on the various extraterrestrial cases all over the world in his lifetime. Yeah. I mean, it's really, really amazing.
Star Trek, did that get anything right about aliens, or did it depict any species that you're familiar with in your book?
Gene Roddenberry used to go to channelings of the nine. And this happened back east. It's a consciousness of nine advanced beings. So he knew that he was receiving downloads as well. What's fascinating is if you look at everything in Star Trek, the numbers on the Enterprise add up to nine, Deep Space Nine, Seven of Nine. I think I counted something like 23 different things of how the number nine comes into being in Star Trek. Now, I do know Dr. Frank Stranges, who was friends with Valiant Thor from 1959 until his death in 2008. He told me a lot of things about being on the ship, and he said a lot of the things that were in Star Trek, not the beings per se, but a lot of the technology was there. So he actually was doing that. Like when I had my spiritual awakening, when I was writing the screenplay to Stranger at the Pentagon, I remember I finished the very first draft and I went and I gave it to Dr. Frank, and he said he would read it and that he would give it to Valiant. And I said, great, then, you know, just give me any notes. And a couple of weeks later, he called me to his office and Dr. Frank gave me his notes. And I said, did Valiant read it? And he said, yes. He said, he doesn't read, he absorbs. And he said, he held it, he absorbed it. I said, well, do you have his notes? And he said, no, he said to just tell you good job. I said, that's it? I said, that's it? No notes? I said, no. But I came home, did whatever. I went to bed. I woke up early in the morning, as I always do, to write. And all of his notes were floating like the rings of Saturn around my head. And so that's how the notes were delivered all the time, were through downloads.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to talk about, you did in 2013, the short Stranger at the Pentagon about Valiant Thor. Could you introduce our audience to who Valiant Thor is? He was a visitor here, I think, from like 1959 to maybe up to 1970. I'm trying to remember.
No, he is still here.
He is still here.
Yeah. Valiant Thor, before he came, there were extraterrestrials that came and met with some military people on a base to tell the president, and it could have even been the president before him. Who was that? Truman? Eisenhower before him?
Yeah, I think Eisenhower. We've had a guest that talked about this subject. I thought it was Eisenhower, but I could be wrong.
Right, because he was always coming to meet with Eisenhower. So, long story short, they said that a universal emissary was coming to have a conversation with him. So they were very aware, the government, that he was coming. He landed in Alexandria, Virginia, in an agricultural field on March 16th, 1957, at 8 a.m. in the morning. He was brought directly to the Pentagon. That was a Saturday, by the way, so there wasn't a lot of traffic out. He was brought to the Pentagon. He met with the Secretary of Defense, the Undersecretary of Defense. They put him on the train, took him directly over to the White House and into the Oval Office, where he met with Eisenhower, the other powers that be. Nixon was late because it was Patricia's birthday and they were getting celebrations ready. Basically, what he did is he came with a divine design that would help eliminate sickness, poverty, disease, how to prolong your life. Came with, of course, lots of other information about how dangerous atomics are and that every time they blow something up, it offsets everything in the universe. It's a ripple effect, and it even goes through the dimensions and offsets other things there. And also talked to them about free energy. And so it was decided that he would become a guest of our government for 3 years. They arranged for an apartment for him that was in the floors below the Pentagon. This would give them enough time for him to discuss the proposal with all the powers that be. And he also was there in the very beginning stages of NASA as well. So, you know, a lot of people go to the dark place when I give them that statement. Oh, my God, he's here to take over our world.
Yeah.
But actually, Valiant Thor, if I were to put him somewhere, I would put him in the role of seraphim. He is closest to God. There is somebody that is very high up at NASA who says, I work for the hammer and the hammer works for God. Which leads you to believe, is he the one that was written about all those years ago? Don't know. It just opens your mind to, I have no idea.
Has he aged? You said he's been here since, looks exactly the same. Can I ask you, he was in the United States for 3 years. Now is he like available to consult with all of the governments? Or is he just kind of a U.S. treasure right now that we communicate with?
I do not know the answer to that. I would assume that he is still helping and assisting NASA to make sure that everything with us is on track to make sure that things go accordingly so that things don't get destroyed or anything like that. I mean, Bill Tompkins, who worked for TRW, who built some stuff when we were on the moon, he was actually watching it live. One of the astronauts saw these gigantic ships all around there, which were basically saying, you're trespassing. And they were very fearful of that. And he said that there were Nordic beings that were working there at TRW and in other places disguised as secretaries, who would give them ideas and things like that. But one of the big things is that they were there to help them build these giant ships so that we and they could therefore be protected against the same reptilian problem. Which I also found interesting. So,
one question I have, actually two questions and a Craig a trivia note for you, Kyle. The first one is, do alien races war against each other?
Yes, some of them have in the past. The first wars were the Lyran Wars, which is where it is said that the human race originated from. And when the reptilians started venturing out into space, they went there and they saw their grand resources and wanted them. And they said that's where one of the first wars happened. And then a lot of those Lyrans escaped out into Pleiades, Vega, Sirius, Arcturus, you know, all different types of things. And you kind of wonder, okay, well, you know, Arcturian beings look different than us. They have the bug eyes, but they're not frightening. You wonder, how did everything evolve from there? Or were there beings there already? And were they now intermingling or what have you? But yeah, I mean, there's always talk about reptilians offsetting a bunch of things everywhere.
Wow. And, you know, as a casting director, do your worlds ever mix? Do you ever look at any actors and go, that's a hybrid, or this person could be an alien? I mean, Grace Jones, I think, is awesome, was in one of your films, right?
Grace is just, I mean, we look at her and we go, she's so amazing, she's off planet. This is what I say is sometimes when I'm casting something, I can recognize in that person's past history if this character was a part of their past life. I can see that. I can feel it. I can see what they emote. And sometimes they'll confide in me. But in the early days of casting, I used to just ask people, I say, okay, if a spaceship landed today and they were good, would you go for a ride? I would say 90% of the people said yes, and the other said no. And I said, why? And they said, because I would be too afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
So here's a tip for you for casting. If you're doing a movie about the Salem witch trials and, you know, about someone who's had a past life, you may want to bring in Kyle for that.
Sometimes it goes, if they were doing a biography on my life, I still wouldn't get cast.
Well, here's what I want to give you, the quick bit of trivia on Craig. You know, Kyle, you might be disappointed because you're vegan. He was a childhood actor. His first commercial was the first McChicken sandwich in the national campaign.
Pretty cool. Know, I think Kyle will appreciate this. I was so naive when I was young and going on auditions. It was the very first time I had been auditioning for years and didn't get any callbacks. And I don't know, just this one day, something clicked in me and I changed. I went in, I read really well. I know I did well for the commercial. I left. My agent called and said, oh, you have another McDonald's commercial interview. And I went, oh, cool. Went on that one. And then they said, you have another one. That was a third one. Then I had a fourth one. And then I had a fifth one. I didn't realize these were callbacks. I thought they were different commercials. And then in the fifth time, I'm sitting in the lobby with three other dudes that look just like me. And the casting person came out and she said, who wants to go first? Don't know why, but I raised my hand. I said, I do. And they took me in with the guy that I'd be selling the sandwich to. We kibitzed. We had fun. I looked at everybody, 30 people around this giant conference table. And they said right there on the spot, those are the two we're hiring. Send everybody else home.
Wow.
That's so cool. That's great.
So yeah. I like to tell that story to always say, go first. You never know.
That's really cool. Yeah. Stranger at the Pentagon. I remember you did this back in like 2013. I mean, gosh, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but it was.
It doesn't.
It's so crazy because I remember, I think I auditioned for that. I remember for what role.
Yeah.
I think I remember coming in and I was still living in LA. I live in Atlanta now. And you did really well with that film.
Yes, really, really well. It brought the visibility of Valiant Thor. In fact, somebody put Valiant Thor's name on about 25 books saying that he authored them. Put them on Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
You know, American Horror Story did a horror story about Valiant Thor sleeping with Mamie Eisenhower. No, it wasn't cool. It was just, it would be like taking Jesus, a figure of great prominence, spiritual, and degrading them in a film.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's how I looked at it, right? But
because there was no like consultation. It was just like their
story. It was just there, version. And they just made up their version. So, I just say that if anybody watches it, that's not who Valiant Thor is. He wasn't a robot, which they made him out to be in the end, or coming to take over the world, or
those weird things.
I really look at it that you have a great responsibility when writing books, making films, and that kind of thing, what you're putting out into the consciousness. But we're in a dualistic world, and people are going to do what they're going to do. I'm still trying to set up the feature film to Stranger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, all we need is the money. So any millionaires out there, call me.
It's always pesky money, yeah.
It's a pesky money, but we're ready in all other areas.
Yeah.
And people want to watch it, they can go to strangerathepentagon.com. I actually have all of Dr. Frank's out-of-print books, including Stranger at the Pentagon.
Oh, cool.
There for if anybody wants to get them, posters and all kinds of goodies. And the DVD, I think I have like 8 DVDs left. So they're a collector's item. They have a little behind the scenes, and it's also on Amazon Prime as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And then I think you mentioned your UFO hotspot compendium.
Yes.
It's all the places you have to visit before you die or are abducted. That made me laugh. Yeah. Is that out now or is that coming out?
It is. Yeah, it's out now. And what's really cool about this book, my last two books were with MUFON, is that the head of MUFON sent out to all the state directors to nominate their favorite hotspots. I compiled those. I added a few of my own, and that's how the UFO Hotspot Compendium came about.
Cool.
So I give you the when, the where. You get to hear the entire story of the place. Like the very first one is Giant Rock and the Integratron. You get to learn about who Saul Gonda was, the being from somewhere else that met with George Van Tassel and gave him the blueprints to build the Integratron, which was predated maybe about 5 years before Valiant Thor came here. And the Integratron would do the very same thing. It would regenerate your cells where you wouldn't get sick. You would stay looking young. George never in one interview described Saul Gonda, but all the interviews that were available, one time he would say one thing about it. So I went through all of that and actually had an artist come up with what Saul Gonda might have looked like. And I put that in the book. So you get to hear the entire story. And then when you're there, it's things that you can do when you're visiting the site, right? Like, for instance, the Integratron, you have to make a reservation on their website for a sound bath. It's just not a place that you can go to. You have to have a sound bath, which, believe me, you're going to want it. It's up in the second floor, and the acoustics up there, when they're playing the Singing Bowls, you feel like you're levitating.
It is
the most coolest thing. The area is heavily known for UFOs flying over Giant Rock and also over the Integratron. And then, of course, you know, all the contact numbers and everything. Like if you wanted to go out for a little sky watch at Giant Rock at night, I give you the person who's the historian of Giant Rock. And she does take people out there. And if you have night vision binoculars, bring your chairs out. You just sort of hang out there. It's really, really beautiful at night. And then if you want to learn things even a little more, I give you the sources, so that you can go there and you can find things out a little bit more. So we go through all of these great various hotspots. Some are terrifying.
In what way?
Yeah. Well, for instance, you know, there was the guy who's passed away now who owned the Stardust Ranch. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who said that, I don't know if it was every 45 days, it was on a cycle, that these gray evil beings would come through this portal and they would see them with their own eyes. He is said to have captured one on film. I saw the picture. It's suspicious. Yeah. So I don't know if it's real or not, but he said that he killed several of them. They tried to take his wife. They abducted his wife, you know, all kinds of weird stuff like that. Now, I did send in two of my little trusty workers who were brave enough, and they made a huge donation to his horses. And so they were invited inside, and they said it was the most terrifying, energetic place. They said it was like the walls were seeping with evil. And some other shows have gone there and done stuff. Yeah. One was Zach Bagans. They did a show there where they stayed there, kind of thing. The real big hotspots are Sedona, Esetti Ranch. There's various parts in the, is it the suspicious mountains? What are they called in Arizona?
I'm not sure.
Superstition Mountains, I think. Mm-hmm. You can see a lot of craft there as well. The best thing to do is if you're going to go hunting, if you don't have night vision binoculars, get a pair. Okay. Because what you can't see with the naked eye, you will totally see with the night vision.
Sure. And, do you have like any personal favorites?
My personal favorites are the Integratron and Giant Rock.
Okay.
And Bradshaw Ranch, out in Sedona and Bell Rock Vortex in Sedona. I actually captured an orb. It was perfectly round. It was flying away from Bell Rock, coming down along the side of the highway. I was driving towards Bell Rock. I saw it coming for me. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I grabbed my phone and I snapped off three pictures. And so I actually got it on film and I put it in the UFO hotspot book.
Oh, sweet.
That's as awesome. Well. And then also another time when I was on Bell Rock in 98, these gigantic orbs. One was bumped up all against my body. It was all milky white. It had different patterns. And on each of the different pictures, you would see that the patterns in this milk white were different. I have captured them again in Santa Monica, and I captured them when we were making Stranger at the Pentagon in the soundstage.
Oh, cool.
And I gave them first to Sylvia Brown, who I was friends with, a psychic. And I said, what do you think these are? She goes, oh, those are angels. I went, yeah, because you know what? I totally felt that. I just didn't voice it.
Sure.
Right. So
it's so interesting because it's like, yeah, it really is. Because we talk to so many different kinds of between shamans and psychics and mediums and awakened people and authors and scientists, just so many great people come on the podcast. And there's so many theories about basically all of this. And the more you listen to it, there's so much crossover between whether you're into aliens or whether you're into Bigfoot, whether you're into ghosts, there's so much crossover. And to hear things like that, even ETs can show up in photos as what might be mistaken in as somebody who's exclusively into ghosts, but they might actually be looking at something that's like an ET or perhaps an angel. So it's really cool to consider just the limitless possibilities of all this stuff.
And in the Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, I went investigating a case, which was a MUFON case from a long time ago, about a man who was abducted and continued to have experiences as his backyard was forest. And as he was walking me through his former backyard, because they literally packed up, they only packed up a few things and the house still had all their belongings in it. It was too frightening for them to go back. But these alien beings were walking out of the forest coming towards the house when he hightailed it home with his son. And then the son was telling me the story, how he was in his bedroom and that the being was right below. So while he was telling the story, I was actually snapping pictures and I caught one of the beings interdimensionally on camera. It's holding a light device and it's wearing goggles. But what was interesting about this being is that its legs ended where our knees are. And then the rest was a long, long, long torso. And then a skinny, longer neck and an oval head. And when I looked at it, it was like immediately I knew that that light device was an interdimensional device and that those goggles were like when we're looking through night vision.
Yeah.
That those were interdimensional goggles. It's interesting because when you take pictures and you see nothing is there with your naked eye, the camera somehow knows how to go into that other altered dimension and capture it.
Right.
I did not feel any animosity from that being, but my friend's case was heavily being studied by the government and he sent the picture to them the next day. The answer was, oh, we haven't seen these beings since 1958. Why are they back?
Like Kyle just referenced it. I mean, we've done over 100 shows. You have more questions than you did at the beginning. What's your theory of everything or what's your belief about why we're here, the afterlife? I mean, this is a big question, right? But demons and angels, are they the same as aliens? What's your takeaway on this existence that we have?
Well, I mean, the simplistic takeaway is that we're always trying to evolve. Valiant Thor said it best, which was in a funny little statement to Dr. Frank. You're evolving from a clod to a god.
Boy, do I have a ways to go. All right. Thanks.
So basically, we really are all these things. Even angels, very, very fully conscious people, can shave off a part of their existence and incarnate here to have the experience. Because duality is not a huge experience in the rest of the universe. Almost everybody is fully conscious.
What is duality, Craig? Could you define that real quickly?
Well, duality is that we, in our daily lives, are being guided by our emotions. Now, are we in control of our emotions? If somebody makes us mad, are we going to get revenge on them, then they get revenge on us? Or are we going to sit back and examine it, meditate on it, and try and just make amends with whatever it is? It doesn't mean you have to be friends with that person anymore, but you just don't want the bad energy living in your headspace for free. And as you go on and you start to evolve more and more and more, like in the beginning, for me, one of my exercises was, there was a woman I was working with who just didn't like me. And she did everything in her power to make my days horrible. So on the advice of a spiritual counselor, I actually started just meditating, putting her in a bubble of gold light. And I just started talking from my soul to her soul and asking it to be resolved. And then a part of the exercise was to send her unconditional love. I have to say, it was pretty hard to do. But eventually I did it, and eventually it just all dissipated and it was fine. So I just started to see those types of things happening in my life. And, you know, then I just was like, okay, I want to make sure that if I have any karma, I want to work through it. I just started making amends with people that I thought maybe we had an uncomfortable friendship or something or whatever. I just wanted everything to be free from my body. That's how I began. Really, when we graduate here, we're learning duality on this planet. You think of all the planets in the universe as schools, right? And then there's the University of Melchizedek, which is in the Mira system, which is 490 planetary university spheres. So when we leave here, we go back there, we learn a little, and then we say, you know, I would like to learn more about the science of the universe. So I am now going to take on an Arcturian lifetime, and I'm going to live to be 3,000 years old. That's enough time for me to gain all the experience that I want to know, right? So people don't realize everything came from the same primordial atom. I know it's hard to say. People don't believe when you say we're all the same. Here, we're not all the same, but we're all individuals trying to get back to our unity. I think that would explain it in the simplest of terms.
It's excellent. Thank you.
We should wrap it up. We've taken so much of your time, Craig. Two things I did want to touch upon: the autobiography of an extraterrestrial saga. That's a 5-part series.
Right now it's a 4-part series, and it'll end up being a 7-part series.
Nice.
And after my spiritual awakening with 3 Universal Master Teachers is how that book series came about. And it was completely channeled. I would just sit there and the words would just come out of my hand. The most amazing experience. I didn't know what channeling was. I didn't know what automatic writing was way back when, but that's how it came to be. I was so enthused with everything that I was seeing. I hired an artist to do all the artwork of the beings, the places, their ships, inside their ships, their home world, all of that. So all the books are actually illustrated. Right. Which is really good. And Sylvia Brown wrote the foreword for the first book. She only wrote one other foreword at the beginning of her career. So,
oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. She said all her publishers begged her to write them for their other authors, but she didn't. She never did.
That's a cool honor.
Yeah. Those are really great books. And really, the lead character is Taran. He's dualistic, he's a Pleiadian. And throughout the book series, the reader kind of goes on the journey with Taran and how he goes about becoming fully conscious. So the reader can become fully conscious at the same time.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And those are all available. Where can people find those?
Well, if they want autographed copies for themselves or for Christmas gifts, they can go to my website, autobiographyofunet.com. The book series right there on the homepage. They can click one button and buy all four books, either in hardcover or softcover. And then if they want to purchase the UFO Hotspot Compendium or the ET Species Almanac, if they click in the tab Other Books, they can purchase those books there. People want me to sign them for themselves or for somebody else, just shoot me an email through the website and let me know.
Cool.
And I'm happy to do that as well. And then we have the ET Species Almanac, the documentary, coming out next year. So I know I sent you guys a thing for their crowdfunding campaign because we still have a lot of bills to pay. Sure. if anybody is interested in helping, that would be great. If they wanted at this point to become an associate or executive producer, they can email me separately through my websites. They could do it on autobiographyofunet.com or craigcampobasso.com. And my email address is readily available everywhere on the internet. You can't help that. And I'll give them the information on how they can do that and have their name in the film and, of course, on IMDb as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time today, Craig, and sharing your insight and all your knowledge. And it's good to talk with you again. I haven't talked with you in so long.
I know.
Yeah, like over 10 years, I feel like. It's crazy.
I know. It goes by so fast.
It does.
Kyle, you have to buy his hotspot book because we're going to travel on the road anyway. You might be passing through these places, not even know. So thank you both, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. What a great show, Craig. And we will put links in the show notes for the episode.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate you.
All right. Bye, guys.
You've been listening to the Afraid of Nothing podcast. Please subscribe and like us on Facebook. Until next time, stay scared.
Hey, you're still here? Great. Then why not listen to another episode? Visit afraidofnothingpodcast.com to peruse all the shows. That's afraidofnothingpodcast.com. And while you're there, click the coffee cup icon to buy me a coffee and leave a review. I'll give you a shout-out in an upcoming episode, and the world will know how swell you are.